Today on this wonderful first Saturday in August. How many of you have thought to yourselves, oh, you could be more prosperous, but gosh, you had some tough stuff in childhood, and that would have been the key, a better childhood. Well, you know, certainly there's nothing wrong with having a good childhood. Our wonderful guest today had many beautiful things in her childhood, and yet a happy childhood is not the assurance that we're looking for success. She faced some serious challenges and has come through with shining colors. Get ready for a marvelous experience. Let me introduce you, my beloved listeners, to Lynedra J. Carroll. She's an accomplished businesswoman, singer, artist, and author. And she offers powerful and innovative ways to attain prosperity, love, good health, and a sense of purpose while, get this, still living an ethical life. And who knew that that could be done in today's modern times? She has performed at the Vatican and at the Nobel Peace Prize concert. She has also, for many years, been the manager until 2003. She was the manager and the mother, of course, which I think came first, of the recording artist Jewel. And her book is the winner of the NAPRA 2001 Nautilus Award for Excellence, her book Architecture of All Abundance, and that illustrates alternative methods for attaining prosperity, love, health, and a sense of purpose. Now, there's some wonderful people, some of you familiar with Conversations with God, Neil Donald Walsh. He's reviewed her book and says Lynedra Carroll's work stands as a deep testament to the human spirit and the undeniable role of conscious intent in the evolution and transformation of humanity. Others of you or may have also heard of Deepak Chopra, the MD and the founder of the Chopra Center for Well-Being there in the San Diego area. And he is an amazing person. He reviewed her book and says that it is an inspirational book, and it explains how she recovered from a life-threatening illness and rebounded from business failure to achieve an abundant life and fulfilling career. So this is just a wonderful opportunity for us to have some time with Lynedra. And her book, it traces the path of her as a mother, manager, in, of course, the navigating the shark-infested waters of the entertainment industry. And I mentioned previously, had a life-threatening illness that, you know, she'll mention a little bit, and got past all of that and is just living a fabulous, wondrous life. So she's here today to share with us some of her secrets, some of the advice, and, of course, to let us know about her book so that we can get in on some of her secrets. And with no further waiting, let me excitedly welcome Lynedra Carroll. Lynedra, hello.
Ken, it's really great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I am just superbly excited. As I've looked at some of your book, there's just so much depth and meaning to it. Now, that, I'm curious, of course, because here it's titled Architecture of All Abundance, which is a bit unusual. Would you tell us more about what you mean by the architecture of abundance?
Well, there's a structure that underlies everything that is like an architecture, I think, and is definitely the source of abundance. And you might say that it's silence. It's the silence that underlies and the source that underlies. So when we begin to understand more that we are the source, we're the source that we're sourcing, and we're the sourcer that sources the source. You know, I think that in our world we don't have, for instance, a mechanical generator that is truly a generator. It takes energy to be able to generate energy. So you have to put gasoline or something in the generator, and then you can generate electricity. And I think that we create things like that because we don't have a basic understanding yet that we are generators. And when we really deeply understand ourselves as generative, I think we'll start to create technologies that also are truly generative.
Mm.
And in my book, one of the things that I talk about is the difference between sustainability and generativity. I think it's an important thing to add to our understanding about sustainability. And we all are now, I think, beginning to really deeply understand the need for sustainable systems, our place in a sustainable system. And beyond the idea of, or added to, I think maybe better, the idea of a sustainable system is the generative system. And because nature isn't just sustainable. Nature is wildly generative.
Oh, yeah.
And so are we as a part of nature. But we don't relate to ourselves that way, really, do we?
No. I think you, more than most folks, can really relate from your adventures in childhood. And maybe you want to share a little bit about that, of being in wilderness areas and taking the time to actually get connected to that still small voice within, to that still point. Would you share a bit about that?
Well, I was reared in Alaska. My parents homesteaded there in the 30s, and it was just a wonderful place to grow up. And we just roamed the hills. In the summer, we'd leave the house in the morning and not come home till midnight, and we would all of us just sort of find each other roaming across the hills and running down to the beach, and we really just lived in and experienced nature. And we also were very aware of the seasons, and you had to live in harmony with the seasons. People in small rural areas do have such a better sense of this, and Alaska on top of that was kind of a frontier area. And so all of those frontier or pioneering values were really the values that drove the culture and the economy. So the things that were valued were not, for instance, money, but trade and, you know, the fish that you got for your when you put your subsistence net out in the fall. And the ability to have enough resources to share when others came through, and to pull together to build something. And all of those kinds of things were the values that I was raised with, and there was little conversation about money. There really was, though, a sense of being able to take care of yourself and of being very safe, even in quite a harsh environment, but it depended on community.
Mm. Wow. And of course, the spiritual teachers are reminding us that there's one, that we have individual consciousness, but there is an interconnectedness. And you got to experience that powerfully in growing up.
I remember I had a little epiphany when I was 9 or 10. I had been at church, and they had been talking about how I was reared a Mormon, which incidentally was very fine religion to be raised in, has kind of wonderful values. But they were talking about, you know, like every church, Mormonism being the one right way. And I went away from that Sunday school class quite thoughtful about it and feeling, you know, comforted by the fact that I was in the one right way.
Mm.
And thinking how, you know, thank goodness I was, and what if I wasn't? You know how a child will think.
Oh, yeah.
And then I started thinking, but what about all those who aren't? And I felt quite disturbed by the idea. And Mormons have a big missionary program, so I knew about that. But then I thought, how could the missionaries reach everyone in the world? Oh, and I just began to be very boggled by this. And I was sitting, as I often did, out on a stump by a little favorite stream in a little woods, and thinking about this, and watching the water and looking at the trees. And all of a sudden, I thought to myself, wait a minute. There's not only one kind of tree. There's lots of different kinds of trees, and there's not only one kind of water. There's rivers and oceans and lakes, and there's not only one kind of anything. Oh, there can't be only one right way to God. There can't be.
Mm-hmm.
And something in me just really knew I had happened upon an idea that had truth. And it landed in a place that I trusted. And I thought, I think for me, Mormon is good now, but there are many right ways. I think it's something about when you're in nature, you know there's not only one way, there's only one.
Yeah.
So everything is part of that one.
Ah, well, wow, this is exciting. I want to take a moment to step into something and perhaps invite you to share. I can read a little bit, because it's the beginning of your book. It starts off, and there's a powerful question that was asked of you, who do you think you are? And of course, it wasn't asked in that fashion. It wasn't a conversational tone, and yet your story about that, would you like me to, or would you want to read that initial part, because that's so powerful.
I think let me see if I can grab it quickly enough, and if I can't, then...
And if not, I've got it right here.
Okay. Here it is. He didn't like what she had done, so the man leaned forward into the face of the little girl and hollered in a very mean tone, "Who on earth do you think you are?" She felt a response to the tone and volume of his voice and the message of his body language and words. She felt fear and confusion. She also felt offended. Yet at the same time, she thought, this is a very important question. I think I'll think about it when I am alone. Who do you think you are? She often asked herself versions of this question. As she grew older, there were many answers, depending.
Hmm. Ah.
That opens, actually, the book, doesn't it?
Yes.
And I guess I chose to start with that question of who are we. Not only then does it lead into the chapter that gives my background and the values that shaped me and being reared in Alaska and a couple of seminal stories, but it also really, I think, is very much at the basis and involved somehow in this underlying architecture, who we think we are. Is a question that we start asking young as we're trying to define ourselves, our ego, our persona, our personality, are very engaged in this time of self-definition. And at various stages, that question comes very strongly to the front again, who we think we are. And there's so much of our life that's spent trying to unwind who everybody else thought we were. that we took on, and we all know the impact of that, and how that part of it lingers astonishingly long.
Before
we begin to wonder, well, who do I think I am, and then why do I think I'm that, and where does that idea come from? But as we begin to get more to the core self, and to really feel who we are, to know the divine in us, and begin to understand our birthright in that way, then a different kind of understanding of ourselves and a different peace begins to come in. Because otherwise, the question is an unsettling one. It has a lot of outward referencing that's in the question.
Mm-hmm.
Who do I think I am? Who do I think I should be? Who do others think I am? How do I want to be perceived? But when we begin to reach into that silence in us and to know how awesome we are and to begin to love ourselves like we are loved and to get a real glimpse of that, then the heart opens and the answer to the question, who do I think I am, becomes a very different kind of thing. And we all have glimpses of that, and we're all, I think, in this phase really trying to expand those moments of understanding the more that we are.
Yes. Oh, very much. And like you had referenced, the question, who do you think you are? And then you put in there, depending, opens the door to so many different contexts. Who am I in relation to myself, my creator, my family, my career, my community? I mean, just so many different contexts. And it's so important to, I believe, to notice how we are defining ourselves in these different areas. And of course, you've been able to reconnect to that spiritual nature. I think that, I don't know if that was one of the things that helped you to get through some of these tough times, because there's mention made that you had a life-threatening illness.
Right. I've had several of those. You know, at this point of my life, what I'm concluding about that, and maybe it'll seem a little shocking, so I'll have to explain it perhaps, but
okay.
Where I am in my life now about the difficulties, I've just had another health challenge, by the way, I'm beginning to understand that the good times, the bad times, the hardships, the money worries, the riches, they're all the same. And on the one hand, I sound a little like a crazy person when I say something like that. But in the past couple of years, the misfortunes, and there have been a couple of really considerable ones that have befallen me, I'm finding that there's a sweetness and I don't feel afraid of them. It's not that I don't feel fear, because I do sometimes certainly still feel fear, but I feel like, well and good, you know, that's fine. Feel the fear, eat the fear, let it pass, transform the fear, however it moves in me. But the fear is the same as the not fear. And, in my book, I think I reference an interview that I saw with on TV with the artist Björk. She's a very interesting young woman from Iceland, I think it is. And she was in L.A. during an earthquake, and the interviewer said, I understand you were just in a pretty noticeable earthquake, and you were in the top floors of a tall hotel. That must have been terrifying. And she said, oh, I loved it. It was so amazing. She said, the building started swaying way back and forth, and shaking, and you could hear people screaming and running in the hall. And she said, I jumped up on my bed, and I hollered, Yahoo! And she said, I just rode my bed like a bucking bronco. Yahoo! And there was something about that, that's what I'm talking about, is that this life is so precious, it's so amazing, that even I've had, because of health problems and some other problems, some tremendous cash flow difficulties recently, and about as serious as anybody could have. So these are real challenges. And I feel those. It's not that I just, like, feel nothing and run around with a silly grin on my face. But at the same time, I feel only here, only now can I experience this. I should experience it. I should see whatever. How can I transform this? How can I, how can I feel this differently than just to be really fearful, paralyzed, terrified, and, you know, to start that downward thing. And when I had the heart problems recently, which is part of what caused inability to work and other types of things, and I felt the same. I felt like there's something so rich, so not to be missed. It's not that I would bring it on. It's not that I think life has to be hard. It's that I think maybe the whole idea that all of that is hard is our training. And that from another perspective, we would see, oh, yes, I would go and experience that. Even that I would choose to go experience. And I don't mean to be glib about some of the serious problems in the world. And certainly I stay involved in finding solution and making the changes, you know, bringing solution to the difficulties in my life. Again, I don't just become a silly grin doing nothing. But the change in that so changes how solutions come into my life. And changes how the whole thing feels and how I'm, it's like having a rudder on a ship. It's like the rudder, and as opposed to a rudderless ship, which that's what it feels like when we're all caught in fear, isn't it? So.
Oh, yeah, or some sort of a downward spiral.
Right.
Where
we're in a big whirlpool.
One problem leads to thoughts of another and another and another, and pretty soon a person is just can be overwhelmed in so many ways.
Quicksand, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And what's the secret to getting out of quicksand? If I understand correctly, isn't it to be still?
Yes, that's a great thing you said. To be still. Yeah. And also, I'm sure you would add too, to be joyful, to rejoice in everything that's going on, this unbelievably abundant life that we have, you know, whether I can pay my mortgage right now or not, doesn't have anything to do with my quality of joy. Only by my training, darn it.
Yeah. Yes.
And I don't want to live in that. You know, wherever I learned that I needed to somehow get away from the quote bad experiences and have only the quote good experiences. I'm tired of that. I'm done with that. If my basement floods, which it did in the winter due to a pump breakdown, I just want to go, yahoo! You know, what if it really did feel like that? Not if, what, instead of that being some, you know, phony thing that we were telling ourselves, what if it felt like that? What if we understood life was that rich?
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a marginally insane concept, but I think I'm onto something there.
Oh, absolutely. Well, one of the things that makes me curious, because Rudyard Kipling, this may be, if you haven't heard of it, he wrote a poem called If. And one of the, it's mostly known for the verse, if you can keep your head while those about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. It's a beautiful poem. The second stanza of that poem says, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same.
I'm going to have to go online and find that poem. That's
really it's one of my favorites.
I'm not familiar with it.
And I think it'll tie in beautifully. Well, to me, one of the rich things that you may be able to support myself and the listeners with is a bit of the process for you, because you are touching on such fertile ground of walking deeply in spiritual principles, to remember that you are this divine child and to apply it at times when most people would be prone to taking, why me, or how am I going to handle this, or just accessing some state of being that isn't going to help them solve it. And you're there talking about this richness of claiming the full feeling and the joy in whatever comes. And I don't know if you can share a little bit about how you develop that, or when something comes up, what you're actually doing in your mind to achieve that, because that's a sweet place to be.
Let's see what I would say. Well, I think the most important thing for me personally is my spiritual practice. So I'll tell you what that is. Each person must really kind of craft their own. But maybe if I share what works for me, part of it may be able to be added for someone else.
Sure.
And so I spend now an increasing amount of time in the morning in meditation, and it's something that has just my ability and my desire to do that has grown. So I haven't tried to force myself to spend an hour and a half or 2 hours or something. It's just that gradually that has, the sweetness of it has grown to the point that it's hard to pull away. And the way that I do it is...
You're just liking it, huh?
Yes.
Communing with the,
right.
with the creative source of all it is,
yeah.
Can actually be fun, huh?
That's the place that we want more and more to get. And so what I do is kind of simple. I just quiet myself, and I focus first on a area right at, you know, kind of in the third eye area a little, and just breathe and relax and pay attention to where I'm sitting. And then I build a structure around me that I have found is very calming, that is an octahedron. And so I just let this octahedron, which is two, I think they're equilateral triangles, one that points up and one that points down, and their bases are matched.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a pyramid above me and a pyramid below me, and
okay.
I'm kind of sitting where their bases match. And I find that a very calming, simple, calming structure. And when an upset comes into my life, or just the blasting energies these days that can really unseat us, so when I feel something like that, I'll just quickly form that that structure, and I really work with geometry in my life. So I'll sit in this place that is easier and stiller, and then I'll drop into my physical heart. And in science, they've discovered that the field that's built from focusing on the heart chakra is a much more subtle field, and the one that's built from focusing on the physical heart is a more dynamic field in some ways, and also quite dynamic into the effect on the body. And then I have a real sense, as many, many people do these days, of the divine or beloved family that works with me, that I'm a part of interdimensionally.
Oh!
And so I open to that. I invite a kind of co-creativity or a joining, and then I just throw open the doors of my heart and sit in first a sense of gratitude about everything. and let that gratitude expand until it begins to overwhelm and kind of become a bliss or a big happiness. And when, you know, Blabbermind starts having much to say, I just kind of smile, because it still does, you know. And then as I sink into this, I can still hear Blabbermind, and it goes on, but it's like up at the surface somewhere, way up there at the top of the swimming pool, you know, and I've sunk down to the very quiet depths at the bottom of the swimming pool. And way up there, I can still faintly hear the noises of my mind having much to say, but it's a faraway murmur.
Mm.
And I let that sense of gratitude expand and expand in this open-heartedness and blissfulness. And often I'm just wept, and tears of fullness just will stream down my face. And I will just sit as long as it carries me away, and give myself permission to stay there. And that really sets my clock for the day.
Ah.
And I'll take a shorter period of that in the afternoon, because I often get kind of frayed by afternoon, and, you know, all the phone calls or whatever is going on.
Sure.
Travel and so on. And then I'll create that same little thing at night, short or long, sometimes only 5 minutes before I fall asleep. But I'll create that structure and that feeling, and then drop off to sleep. And it helps the night and morning anxieties that so many of us are experiencing. I read somewhere, I can't remember now where it was, it was a scientific notation. Maybe it was in Smithsonian or something. But it said that the science is very puzzled right now by this great increase in emissions coming to us from deep space.
Ah.
So something in me knows about that. You know, when I read it, I thought, something in me knows about that. I don't know what I know about that, but there's a lot going on these days. And so I feel the calming structure of the octahedron is more needed for me, and this state of bliss, which generates into a fullness, and that, I think, is really the expression of the ultimate prosperity, to feel the fullness.
Mm.
You know, I love the principles in The Secret, the book, and so on, but beyond that still has you attached to desire. You know, I want more money, I want a car, I want a house, I want, you know, and we're asking, wanting things. So this is so much the culture of desire that we live in. But really, experiencing your own fullness, knowing you're full, that's real abundance. And that's when you become the generator, is when you have the fullness.
And now, were you able to apply this? I'm not... You know, like when you started managing Jewel's career or other business ventures, because you've done some, you know, some things in business. And so it makes me wonder, you know, was this a part of your generative process that helped you in those areas? Or
it was, and I feel like recent difficulties that I've had have taken me now to another level where I'm really understanding the fullness. So the coming from my own shepherd's heart and working and developing a career and things from my own desire to serve and to be expansive and to be prosperous was how I would say that I developed the abundance that I had before. Now I'm in a period where I'm challenged in a way that I haven't been in a dozen years again. And the opportunity that's given me is to go beyond the tools that I used and to begin to really be fullness and to understand abundance again at another level. And so I feel like I'm learning again how to work differently and even more wonderfully than I did before.
Mm. Wow.
And that the lull, or the setback, or however we might think of it, is really the opportunity for that. And the more I can just throw my heart open to the difficulties, instead of feeling like I can't wait till I'm out of them, and I've got to get out of them, and what did I do to deserve them, and what did I do wrong to get into them, you know, all of that. Oh, my goodness.
Huh.
Blabbermind has so much to say.
Ah, well, it's wonderful that you have illustrated, you know, for us today, one method, you know, in creating some what we would call, I guess, your still place or your sanctuary. And there's a saying that no matter how stormy the ocean is, no matter how much chaos is going on at the surface, when you go deep enough, it's calm.
Right.
And then you've illustrated that for you, what you call blabbermouth, or the different, it could be different people's voices, mom, dad, boss,
right.
Who knows, the president, I don't know, just somebody saying something that doesn't make us feel good. And yet we can go to a place in which those voices become so distant and so soft, and that while they're there, it's of no consequence anymore.
Right.
You've gone, you know, deep into this place of connectedness, and from that place, there's something in the Bible that says, if God is for you, then who can be against you?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me, as I listened to you, I was kind of being guided to this thought that Christ came and demonstrated this unwavering faith. And from that place of unwavering faith and connectedness, created lots of miracles. And there was like no doubt that it was going to happen. And it seems like maybe you can comment upon this, you were going in different stages of deepening faith and then coming to other challenges to get to that perhaps deeper place of connectedness. I'm not sure. Would you kind of share a little bit about what you're experiencing?
I would say that's it. That's precisely it. And it's just it's just too bad that we have the training that those are bad things that happen to us, and that we have to try to avoid them at all cost, and so on, you know, or that we did something to deserve them, or we weren't spiritual enough, or they wouldn't have happened. These are all really, they're insane ideas, but they're deep in us. They're deep in us. And they also raise a sort of dilemma, because if you just accept everything, well, you might as well just call a ton of bricks on your head. You know, how does the world change if you just accept everything, which is really valid? And I think another part of my spiritual practice is what I call the resounding no. And I find most people just want to say yes, and so the idea of saying no doesn't maybe communicate as well, and so there's another way that I would say it. But if there's abuse in your life, or something, you know, like that, and you're really done with it, I mean, when you're really done with that, it disappears from your life, one way or another.
Ah.
It's not in your life anymore.
And you describe some of this in your book?
I do touch on this. It's something that I've thought more and more about. And working in the sort of shark-infested waters of the music industry, it was something that was really important, was if I have a resounding no, then they don't break down the gates. And if I just want everything is no, and I don't want anything, no bad thing, and oh, I avoid conflict at every moment, and I don't want to swim with sharks, you know, all of that, then my life gets eaten up.
Mm.
And I can get overrun. And so another way to think of it is, if we have in ourselves this feeling of enough, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really amazing dream that I've been writing about, which is where my idea of Resounding No came from. But to make it short, I dreamed that I was a girl in another land, and it was a land that had always known peace and plenty, and then that began to change, and the waters began to dry up, and the harvests weren't good, and we couldn't figure out what was going on, and I ended up kind of going off on a journey to try to go to the land of God, to see why God, because God had always taken care of it. And along the way, there were various forces working against me, and then I prayed for a teacher who came and protected me. And then at one point, I was sitting at the fire as we were approaching the land of God, getting close, and and I was just thinking about my teacher, and I somehow sort of slipped into his mind, and then something like a lightning bolt, flashed out and knocked me off my log, and nearly killed me, and he nursed me back, and I said, "Why did you do that?" And he said, "Well, it was just, an uninvited force came into me, quickly without my awareness, and immediately there was a no that responded." And he said in the dream that this is a powerful spiritual principle. And so as we proceeded into the land of God in this dream, I was sort of playing with this. I was trying to figure out, where's that feeling? And I sort of found it once, and this big sort of wave came out of me and caused a big rock slide and nearly killed us. And he said, you know, this is something you need to be really conscious about. And it's something that comes out of the deepest place that you trust that makes your world always right. And there's something about that that was in how I operated. So you don't just, you don't have to put on shark armor to fight the sharks. But you don't just run from them. You know, you really have the force of your own personal no, which is just the other side of yes. But, you know, it's like, if we really felt this no, you know, like, no, you can't have my world. No, you can't. You corporations cannot continue to form corporate government that's gone on for hundreds of years and kept us all captive to your agendas and to fear. No, you know, or enough.
Yes.
This is my dream, and I will dream my dream, and you may not have my dream. And that's what I think people of goodwill are often lacking, is that kind of forcefulness. That's an inner thing. It's not that you have. It's not a club you hit anyone over the head with. It's an inner, impregnable strength that creates your world. Whether it's your personal world that says no, you may not abuse me, or your, you know, community that says to the leaders, no, you may not abuse us.
Mm-hmm.
It's knowing that. And from there, our personal activisms can develop. You know, if we're an activist of
yes.
a certain type, then we'll fight.
And you sure are.
And if we're not an activist of a certain type, if we all just held that enough, that no, no one could take it from us. But we're so far, we're still forfeiting it because we are afraid to hold to no, enough.
Yeah, and from years and years ago, we don't.
Yes, but also the grand no.
Uh-huh. So it's important to not only have this focus of what we want, a peaceful world, prosperity, health, and to say yes to those things. It's also important for being in this material world, as you're saying, that to have this powerful willingness to invoke. I, to me, I call this invoking,
mm-hmm.
you know, divine protection. When in the Bible, there's part of it that just says, you know, dealing with evil or what's called Satan. Satan, get thee behind me. It's like, out of the way. And you're talking about it in terms of this resolute no. I like to think of the old cartoon of Popeye that was a peaceful person generally, and then there's enough adversity, and it was like, that's all I can stand no more. Grabs the spinach and takes care of business.
Yes, and the interesting thing about that is it changes your life. It changes your world. You don't have to change your world. It changes. That is what changes your world. So as soon as I feel, you know, about the, I don't know, again to use that, abusive person in my life, no more. I'm done with this. As soon as I really have that, my world changes. Mm-hmm. I take actions. Other changes come in. People help. You know, it happens. But it happens from that enough.
Yes.
I've had enough. That's enough. You cannot command my dominion.
Right.
And I like how you expressed it. It's great.
Oh, well, thank you. And I'm realizing it is just like so easy and flowing talking with you. I have neglected to let people know the good ways to get in touch with you. For instance, I've been looking on this MySpace.com. Place that you have currently. So if people go to myspace.com and then type in your name under when they click on music, Lenedra Carroll, LenedraCarroll, they get to see a lot about you there, right?
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So
and what I'm into these days.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Would you say that's the best place to connect to you?
Well, in about 2 weeks, my website will probably be back up. So LenedraCarroll.com will be a good place, too. It's just we're redoing it, and
sure.
That'll be another good place.
Okay,
to,
so that one is under construction. It can get immediate access
right.
to you going
at
to MySpace.com.
And then if you go to CDBaby.com, which is a place that sells CDs,
okay,
and you type in Beyond Words CD, you'll go to the Shekinah Ra site for the CD that I accidentally did with someone, which is another, it was such a fun thing that just wasn't planned. The music was spontaneous. It's so beautiful and came out of the last 12 years. I've been privately singing this ecstatic style, very spontaneous ecstatic style, and I met a musician that could do that, and we spent 3 days together, and then there was suddenly a CD without trying.
Mm-hmm.
And so that CD is called Beyond Words, and people can find it at CD Baby.
Okay, and people can do you, how do you recommend people being able to access getting your book?
The book is still available, even though it came out in 2001. It's still available on Amazon and such, so they can get it online.
Ah, okay, and you may be certainly, I don't know, there's a number of ways of doing consulting because you're a speaker and I guess you offer some of your wisdom in a consulting basis.
I do. I primarily work in kind of a shamanistic way, I'd say, helping people. I worked with a well-known poet who wanted to kind of switch his writing career and move in another direction and wanted to understand, figure out the right ways to do that and how to get to that. Been helping a person move, develop a career as a celebrity chef and different kinds of things like that, as well as the other thing I do is artist development.
Mm.
So my consulting is in those two areas, life change, creative development, and so on. And I'm really doing some exciting music projects, and that's what a person can get some glimpses of at the MySpace.com place. My blog is there and gives an idea of these artist advances that I'm doing and stuff.
Oh, okay. Boy, that sounds exciting. just applying these principles. And one that really touched me on your site is a part of this thing that says, "What does it really take to solve our problems?" And that's on the MySpace. And I clicked on "What's simple is true."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's touching.
That blog called "What's Simple is True." Uh-huh.
Yes. And I don't know if you had actually, in your travels, met this Marco from Bulgaria, or...
I didn't meet Marco. I came across, though, some other young people who really inspired me. And when I saw Marco's comment, it set it for these really young people that I've been meeting that are amazing, and that are very like Marco.
Yeah, yeah. And
powerful, what he said.
Oh, his comment here, and I'll invite listeners to go to this part of your MySpace.com website. Marco says here, "Open the eyes of your heart and solve your problems in a new way. You believe it will take years or lifetimes to solve things like hunger, disease, and violence. Is it possible that it is simple and that your need to see it as complicated has been the very thing that has kept you from the answer?"
Ooh. And how old was Marco?
I can't even say it. I'm so embarrassed. A 10-year-old.
Yes. And I could either you or I have said it better. I mean, that was so brilliant. And so like us.
Yes.
So how we are as people.
Yes. Yes. So, and there you are reminding us to go to that place of simplicity, the stillness. That deep place of connectedness to Source.
That's who we are.
Yes.
That's who we are.
Yeah. And it's, to me, as I'm moving in that direction myself, reminded the first of the Ten Commandments. I'm the Lord thy God. Put no other gods. Put nothing before me. Come to me first. Seek me first. Seek the kingdom, and then all things will be added. Well, those are simple sayings, and I'm hearing that you're applying that more and more and finding a blossoming through what many would consider seriously debilitating adversity, and you're laughing at it more and more. Oh, you got your nerve.
Let's do that. It's so, otherwise, it's silly. It's all so silly. We take it so seriously.
Yes. Well,
and you know, you're doing it. There are hundreds of thousands of us doing it. Something wonderful is happening. We've turned the corner. I know we've turned the corner.
Oh, we have. Wow. I just want to thank you. It's like this time has flashed right by, and I feel like I could be talking to you for hours longer. I want to so encourage people to go to your website and MySpace and to connect to you, as well as to be looking for LenedraCarroll.com, LenedraCarroll.com, which will be up in the next few weeks to really get more details about you. And thank you for helping inspire me and my listeners to connect more to spirit and to build that prosperous, abundant life that we all want.
Well, thanks again for the opportunity and for doing what you do. And to all of you listeners out there and your journey to now, we're all just having good lives.
Yeah.
We're all doing what we can and looking to do more. That's wonderful.
Oh, bless you, Lenedra. I'm honored to have you as a guest and to be acquainted with you in my life. And I know my listeners are blessed and will be following and learning from you. And just wish you and all my listeners a wonderful, wonderful, happy day and week coming up as we enter this month of August, and may we all be blessed and prosper mightily. And until next Saturday, when I get to come back and be with all of you again, I want to just say thank you to God and to all of you. Lynedra, have a wonderful week, and I look forward to reuniting with everyone next Saturday.
God bless you. God bless you, Tim. Bye.
Bye. Let go of it, God. Let go.